Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sparty Talk. I am Sashmo rolling at you just hours after I found out I wasn't named Kelly Ripa's permanent co-host. And I'm joined, as always, on this podcast for all things Spartans Athletic, the Thin Man, DB. What up, DB? DB, are you there? DB's going to call back in. But we got a great show for you this week. On this week's show, we'll discuss the absolutely silly AP College preseason poll, the Nike tournament being organized by Spartan AD Mark Hollis, Michigan State President Luana Simon becoming the chair of the NCAA Executive Committee, and a look at Tom Izzo's chances at coaching in the next Olympics. But we begin with Michigan State's football team as it prepares to take on Boise State next week. And we'll try and bring DB in. DB, are you there?
I am. Greetings, Spartan Nation.
Greetings. Can you believe I'm not Kelly Ripa's permanent co-host, DB? I'm upset about this.
I am shocked.
They took gap-toothed Michael Strahan.
Wait, Michael Strahan is the new co-host with Kelly Ripa?
Yes. And don't worry, Spartan, we will get to Spartan football in a second here. But we just had to get this out of the way. Michael Strahan's co-hosting with Kelly Ripa. First of all, the size differential there is going to be hilarious. I mean, she looks like she could be like the ventriloquist dummy sitting on his lap. I mean, that's how big the size difference is.
Mm.
And does Michael Strahan really know what's going on in the world? You know, when they read the newspapers in the morning and they show all the headlines, is he going to be saying this stuff for the first time? I just wonder. You don't know about Michael Strahan. I mean, he's good on Fox NFL Sunday, but co-host for this, I can't wait to see his first celebrity interview. This should be interesting.
Somebody apparently thinks they know what they're doing with this, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think it would have been better, DB. That's all I'm saying.
You would have been great, Satchmel, but we wouldn't have been able to do the podcast anymore.
Well, no, we would have kept doing the podcast. See, because here's the thing. I'm not a morning guy. So in order for me to do this job, I would have had to get a car service in order to drive me in the mornings, because otherwise I just wouldn't be getting that. All right, that's the first thing. But it would have been great, and who wouldn't want a job sitting next to Kelly Ripa on a daily basis? I'm just saying. All right. But let's talk a little Michigan State football. And like I said, we'll get into the crazy college preseason poll, the night tournaments Mark Hollis is hosting, or not hosting, but organizing, Michigan State President Leah Simon becoming chair of the NCAA Executive Committee, all that good stuff. But football, DB. And let's begin the discussion with a column written by one of our favorite big guys. From the Detroit News, the big fellow, Wojnarowski.
Yeah.
Actually, not Wojnarowski, Wojnarowski. I mispronounced the big fellow's name wrong. Wojnarowski.
Yeah, Wojo for short.
Wojo for short. All right. So let's talk about Wojo a little bit here. He brought up an interesting column. And he wrote an interesting column, and he said, the Michigan State-Michigan rivalry is really interesting now because, well, both teams finally have something to play for. They're not that they're on an even playing field, but both teams are peaking. You've got Michigan State fielding a great returning defense, and you have the University of Michigan coming back with a really good quarterback and a pretty decent offense and coming off a record year and with a solid recruiting class coming in. And Michigan finally has a countdown clock for the Michigan State game. It must have just killed alums. Oh, could you imagine all the Michigan alums go, we have a countdown clock for Michigan State? That's right. You do. Deal with it.
Well, you know what? I'm here to tell you something. They had it last year, and we see what that did for them.
Yes. Yes. It didn't do much. The interesting thing is, and it's interesting in that Michigan State sort of figured out how to play Denard Robinson, haven't they? They understand his strengths, his weaknesses, how to play him, and I think that's been a large part of their success against Michigan. Isn't the fact that Michigan State's been the better team in each of the last 4 years, so that's without a doubt. But more importantly, they, more than other teams in the Big Ten, really understand how to play Denard Robinson. But Wojo's larger point is that this rivalry looks like it's going to start heading where Tom Izzo, frankly, wants the Michigan-Michigan State basketball rivalry to head, which is the Duke-North Carolina ACC basketball rivalry. This football rivalry is heading in that direction because D'Antonio's got this program on solid footing, lots of depth, very competitive, and he's got that feisty spirit that the Spartans like. And Brady Hoke's sort of dodging the rivalry question a little bit, but he knows it's important. It's out there, and he's acknowledged it too. And now this is a game that both teams are pointing to with pretty good teams.
Well, Satchmo, our crack staff has just informed me that next week on our podcast we are required to preview the Big Ten season as well as the Spartan season, and we will get to this more next week. But in defense of what you said about our defense defending Denard, I will say, yes, total agreement. And one tells me that I think this is the last year we'll be seeing that offense for the Wolverines, and they will be going to a more traditional pro style.
Yeah, well, they almost have to go to a more traditional pro style. That's Brady Hoke's style. That's the offense he wants to run. He wants to run more of a power running game, play action. Actually, an offense that in many ways is probably a lot more similar to the offense Michigan State's running right now than it is to the hybrid spread slash pro set offense that they've got Denard Robinson running in as well. So it's going to be interesting. It also features two matchups of two coaching matchups that have a lot of people talking. Al Borges has a lot of buzz as Michigan's offensive coordinator, and Pat Narduzzi has a lot of buzz as Michigan State's defensive coordinator. And you get the sense that this is a personal grudge match for the both of them, at least for Narduzzi. I don't think Borges cares one way or another, but Narduzzi likes to beat Michigan. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and to me that's the interesting thing is just how much the Michigan State coaching staff enjoys beating Michigan. Shonell, he didn't really care one way or the other. He was glad when Michigan State played well against Michigan, but he didn't take any personal joy in it. And Nick Saban was happy when Michigan State beat Michigan because he was happy for his school and happy for the program and understood what it meant to the alumni and understood the significance of it. But I don't think he took any personal joy in it. It was more professional joy.
Might I just interject there, too? Nick Saban also realized, Satchmo, that he was smart enough to see that in that period that he was coaching the Spartans, that the Spartans were hindered by scholarship losses from the probation, and he knew they had a lot of catching up to do to crack at Penn State or Michigan or Ohio State at that time.
Yeah, that's true. But you have to go back to the George Perlis days to find the last Michigan State football coach that really took great personal joy and pride in beating Michigan. It does go back that far. And it's a sign of just how much D'Antonio is a Spartan, how much he loves the school, not just loves the school, but has embraced the school's identity and made it his own. But it's been that long since Michigan State's had a football coach that's really just enjoyed beating them and is annoyed when he feels like his team isn't getting the respect that it's due at the expense of the University of Michigan. And it bugs the hell out of him, just the way it bugged Tom Izzo before Tom Izzo just beat Michigan like a drum for so many years in a row that he stopped caring.
Right.
And now that Beilein's got the school up and running, I think Izzo cares about beating Michigan again. But it's fun having coaches that care as much about it as the fans and the students. The question I have for you, DV, is have Michigan fans caught up to the reality of the situation, or are they still living in their living on their glorious laurels, much the way Notre Dame fans do?
That is an excellent question, Satchmo. Always catching DB off guard here on the podcast. I would say that, and this is just my pulse of the few that I know in Wolverine Nation, because I'm going to be honest, I don't like to associate myself too much with Wolverine Nation, especially come football season, I avoid. However, my gauge of Wolverine Nation is that, Satchmo, that yes, they still somehow look at us as little brother. They still somehow think that, you know what, you're 4 years of winning. You know what? You guys got lucky last year. It was our first year out of Rich Rod. And Rich Rod, that was a mistake. They acknowledge that was a mistake, and you only beat us because of Rich Rod. But we're going to set this right pretty soon. That's what Wolverine Nation thinks. But I still think that they think that they have Spartan Nation in their place in football terms.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny to see Michigan fans cite their overall record against Michigan State, which is substantial. Let's not get it wrong. Yeah, this is the overall record. You guys are nothing if you write this record. And, okay,
well,
I get that.
I mean, 20 of those wins came in the 1900s when who knows who was on those teams then.
Yeah, 20 of those wins came in the 1900s. Who cares? Look, if that's the scoreboard you want to cite, you go ahead and do that, Michigan fans. Just understand that we live in the present.
Yes.
We live in the year 2012. And in the year 2012, Michigan State's won 4 straight. there's no denying the fact, right? Not only has Michigan State won 4 straight, they've won them pretty convincingly. And just so you know, Michigan fans, the wins aren't going to be vacated either. So you don't even have that to fall back on. But it's one of those things where you live in the reality and you understand, all right, it is your job to prove that you reached Michigan State's level now. And it's not Michigan State's job to continually prove that they're better than you. Michigan State's established the fact that over the past 4 years, they're the better program. Michigan, step up to the plate. That's all I'm saying. If you want to say, yes, we're back, step up to the plate and win something. And it's not outside of the realm of possibility that Michigan is going to win. The game is in Ann Arbor. Michigan has a relatively good football team. Not a great football team, but a good football team. We have no idea how the season's going to develop. We have no idea how injuries, all of that stuff's going to go on. And we will get into predicting the season next week. So we'll do all of that next week. But just stop living on the greatness of your past. Understand where you are right now. You are a team that is rebuilding. You're a team that's lost talent on the offensive line and the defensive line. You're a team that has a dynamic quarterback who has a propensity to throw jump balls. That's who he is. If he improves a lot, which he can. This is his senior year. There's no reason why he won't improve a lot. If he improves a lot, Michigan's got a great chance of having a good season. But don't chalk off that win against Michigan State as a gimme. That's a big mistake. Understand that this is a real game, and this is a real rivalry. And the faster you do that, the faster you're going to deal with the fact that you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. There's going to be heartbreak some years. There's going to be joy some years. It's going to make the heartbreak disappointing, but not too disappointing because you know you lost to a really good team. And it's going to make the joy that much more. Not only did you beat your rival, but you beat a really good football team. And that's really the way it should be. Michigan State and Michigan should be two of the top teams in the Big Ten for the next 10 to 12 years. And I wouldn't want it any other way, DB.
Yeah, no, I agree. We want Michigan to be good. Bring it. I mean, sure, it's fun to thank Michigan. Don't get me wrong, and they may think the other way. But you know, the rivalry is no fun if one side's just thanking the other. It's got to be for something, and I think it's set up right now to be headed that way, for sure.
Yeah, it's set up to be headed that way, and looking forward to that. And it should be fun. And I think the tone is being set at the top in terms of this rivalry being fun by the athletic directors, Hollis and Brandon. They seem to have mutual respect for each other, but they also really want to win. And it's going to be fun to see. Let's just talk a little bit about the opening games that these two teams face, BB. Michigan State against Boise
yeah.
State.
Yeah.
And Michigan versus Alabama. Let's deal with Michigan-Alabama first. And we won't spend long because this isn't Wolverine talk. This is Sparty talk. But Wolverines, go get your own show, Wolverine fans. But
they probably will because they steal everything. They probably will because they steal everything from them.
Absolutely. But this is actually, I'm looking forward to this game. I'm looking forward to the Michigan-Alabama game because I think this is a chance to see, one, how good Alabama is coming back. Because they lost. Look, everyone expecting Alabama to be great this year. They lost a lot of starters, DB. And
yeah, I haven't kept track of Alabama that close to give us some insight on that.
Yeah, they lost starters, lots of starters on both sides of the ball. And, yeah, they're returning some great players on defense, and they're returning some real power on the offensive line. But when you lose as many players as Alabama loses every year to the pros, it's hard to stay at the top, and especially the first game out of the gates, when the other team knows and they've been pointing at you the entire season that this is going to be one of the best games of the year, or this is one of our bowl games, this is one of our hang our hat games, it's not easy. And so Saban's going to have his team ready. I don't think we really have a good feel for how good they are, though. It's really odd in that everyone makes the assumption that Alabama is automatically going to be great. And everything that we've seen in the last 5 years supports the idea and the concept that Nick Saban just reloads. But on the other hand, don't you want to see him play a little bit before you say, yeah, this is going to be one of the best teams in the SEC? Because you just don't know. You really have no idea when you lose a bunch of players and you don't know how the new kids are going to step in and respond. Yes, it's the SEC. Yes, it's deep. Yes, Nick Saban always has great recruiting classes. I have no doubt they're going to be good. The question is, are they going to start out really good? Whereas Michigan, I think that's a decent chance to start out pretty good. Our good friend Lynn Henning thinks Alabama's just going to smoke them, that it's going to be one of those old schoolyard routes. The whooping paddles are going to come out, and Alabama's just going to wall right over them. I don't think Lynn's right on this one, DB, though. I think this is going to be a game. But Boise State, Michigan State. It's interesting to hear the players talk about Boise State, both on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball. It's clear that the coaches and the players have a lot of respect for the Boise State Broncos. And the one thing that comes up is Boise State is complicated. On defense, they run a lot of different sets. They don't really have a base formation. On offense, a lot of misdirection, a lot of play action, trick plays, pass, a lot of different sets, a lot of different personnel packages. Spartan fans who think this is going to be an easy game, think again. This is going to be a tough football game. Yeah, Kellen Moore, their stellar quarterback has graduated. And so he's not there anymore. But you want to know what? Boise State's still Boise State. There's a reason why. They've only lost five games in 4 years. That's incredible, DB. 5 games in 4 years? That's just unbelievable. There's a reason why. They're well coached. They get good talent. They know what they're doing on the field. And, yeah, they've graduated a lot of players. But you want to know what? It's not going to change the fact that they're well coached and talented. And Michigan State's going to have to come out ready to play to beat these guys.
Yeah. This, no question, Satchmo, this is an extremely difficult opening game, which could go either way. I mean, you've got some similarities here in that, you know, maybe the only difference here is that Andrew Maxwell has just a little tiny bit more experience than whoever Boise State to date has not decided on a quarterback yet for the opening game. But an amazing stat to me, you're talking about Boise State, and just wrap your arms around this for a second. It's pretty incredible, and I don't want to hear what conference they play in because, you know, every conference can be tough to some extent. Boise State, with Chris Peterson in since 2006 and he took over, the record is 73 wins and 6 losses, Satchmo. 73 and 6? That's incredible.
That is phenomenal. And
yep.
Peterson's a fantastic football coach. Peterson's a guy that big schools have been targeting and trying to get over to come. He's not buying it. He likes coaching at Boise State. He enjoys coaching at Boise State, and he's sticking with his team. And good for Chris Peterson.
Yep.
This is a heck of a football team, and you just wonder. You just wonder what they're going to be like coming in. You know they're going to be ready. You know they're going to be well scouted. You know they're going to know that what Michigan State likes to do on down and distance. You know what they're. You know they're going to be ready for Deion Sims. Deion Sims isn't going to be surprised because he's well scouted. They're going to be hanging all over him. They're going to be ready for Le'Veon Bell, and they're going to be ready for Larry Caper, and they're going to have a plan for Golston. Golston's going to have to adjust to this year, DB, because last year teams knew he was a great defender, but they didn't focus their they didn't revolve their game plans around him. You know, they focused on stopping Jarrell Worthy. They worried about the linebackers. They worried about some of the linebackers blitzing. And, yeah, Golston got double-teamed at times. But for the most part, Golston was running free. This year, teams are going to be scheming. They're going to be saying, don't let Golston beat us. Let anybody else on Michigan State beat us. Don't let Golston beat us. This is going to be a different year. And there are going to be some opportunities for some of the people on the defensive squad for the Spartans to come up with big plays because Golston is going to be eating up a lot of attention.
Yeah, absolutely, Satchel. I mean, no question about that. You're right. I mean, they were able to, I don't want to say hide him last year, but they were able to have so many other elements to the line with Jarrell Worthy there last year. And this year, the way I look at it is, sort of that now, hopefully, William Golston and Pat Narduzzi, I'm sure Pat Narduzzi does, understands that, yeah, Golston's going to be keen on by opposing offensive lines, and other guys on that line who are certainly capable are going to have to step up and, kind of be the guy sometimes, especially when Golston's getting double teamed.
Yeah, there's no doubt about other people having to be the guys. And so, speaking of other people having to be the guys, Mikaja Reynolds, I believe his name is, making a push to start at defensive tackle.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that flipped on the offensive line, defensive line. Looks like he settled in and found a home, which is good, and he's turning some heads. And then Jarius Jones, making a push to start at the safety position, DB. And for Spartan fans that don't remember, Jarius Jones, a couple years ago, suffered an Achilles heel injury in spring practice. I think it was last year, suffered an Achilles heel injury in spring practice. Came back towards the end of the season, but really wasn't in position to help Michigan State that much. But now he's healthy. He's over the injury. And he's starting to show the form that he was a couple years ago when he was pushing for a serious starting time. And it's good to see that. I hope he makes it. You know, anytime a guy gets injured, in a serious injury like an Achilles, and comes back for it, you can't help but root for him. And so I'm rooting for him to come back. And this is the position that Trent Robinson was playing. It'll be good to have someone with a fair amount of experience taken over at that spot. We'll see what happens. The job isn't his. There's still more practice time. There might be another one of those controlled scrimmages. By the way, Davey, what do you think of these controlled scrimmages with modified scoring systems that are just hard to follow? Do you like them, or do you want something a little more old-fashioned?
Uh, I guess I don't have a strong feeling about it. I think it annoys the media because they're not sure what's going on. It's like some weird Olympic event.
It's like a modern
that they don't understand. yeah, it's a little like the modern pentathlon, right? I kind of think, you know, whatever's working for Coach D'Antonio and his staff, it's the way that they judge the Spartans, and I guess a lot of schools do it, but I know the Spartans in particular, who we follow, do it quite a bit, and I sort of think if it's working for them and it's their methodology of sort of evaluating the players in these scrimmages, then more power to them. I guess I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. I don't think it distracts from the preparation because I think it's really the coaches that are particularly Coach D'Antonio that's really more focused on that than the players are.
All right. Fair enough. On the offensive side of the ball, Deion Sims, Stevie, has gone from 18% body fat to something like 12% body fat. The man is
pretty
in
good
shape for the season. That's incredible. He's transformed his body. He's showing good speed and hand. And they're talking about Deion Sims catching 6-7 yard passes and turning them into 15-20 yard gains. I'm excited to see this. I can't wait to see what Deion Sims is going to bring to the game. Michigan State's had good tight end. And this is not the Selleck's come in. Linthicum, both very good. Gant was very good. They've had good tight ends that have made big plays for them in the past. But this is the first time in a long while, I would say the first time since maybe Chris Baker that they're going to feature the tight end in the offense.
Hey, Satchel, I wonder if Deion Sims is taking a cue from Paul Ryan and doing the P90X.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know Deion Sims is a big Paul Ryan fan.
Yeah, it's not to get political on the show, but rumor has it, ..
Yes. Yeah, there's... Yeah, maybe he does the extreme, the P90X extreme. He's all about muscle confusion. But I am interested in how this offense is going to evolve because this has been an offense that over the past 3 to 4 years has relied on its outside receivers, Keyshawn Martin, B.J. Cunningham, Mark Dell, to create space for people working the inside of the field. Now this is going to be a case where Michigan State looks like it's going to be relying on Deion Sims, their tight end, to create space for the rest of the offense, to create running lanes for Le'Veon Bell and Larry Caper and Nick Hill, to create space on the outside for an untested wide receiving core, Benny Fowler and Tony Lippett, to get open on the outside. Everything's revolving around Deion Sims, and Deion Sims is going to have to stay healthy and really be a force. Otherwise, the Michigan State offense could be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, that is a concern going into the season with all that talent that was lost to quarterback and wide receiver. You know, Spartan fans are right to be very excited. And I'm not trying to rain on parades here, Satchel. That's not my job, but it is our job on this podcast, to be honest. And, you know, a little bit of struggling out of the gate wouldn't shock us, I don't think.
No, it wouldn't shock us. And we saw last year, Cousins and Sims struggled to hook up at times. And then Sims got injured and he started catching things with one hand. And it cracked me up because Sims said something that was very funny. Like he got used to catching one hand, and now that his hand isn't injured anymore, he's catching it with two. And he goes, "Yeah, it's so much easier to catch with two hands now." Like I was never really doubt there was easier to catch with two hands. But it also reminds me a little bit of Mopee. When Mopee was playing with a broken hand in basketball, he got really good with all the other aspects of the game, doing it with the other hand. And I think Deion Sims is going through a similar thing. He's gotten really good doing everything with just the one hand. Now that he's Now that he has two hands, he's just that much better. And hopefully he can stay healthy, because there isn't much behind him, DB. There is just no depth there.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it would be up to somebody that we haven't seen. And that's sort of the fear with the offense, is that, and Dan Rocher could end up getting criticized, greatly by game two or three if, everything's, in the passing game is going through Sims and it's not working. And then we're doing a lot of three and outs and defenses are seeing that. Hopefully there's some trickeration up the sleeves a little bit in terms of, making the other team guess, because, I tell you, it is kind of going to be a power thing for Michigan State. I mean, luckily, for the most part, that offensive line is real solid, although Satchmo was discouraging to see that Blake Treadwell is going to be out for several weeks.
Yeah, he broke one of the bones. He's got a fracture in one of the bones in his leg. But it looks like they're pretty comfortable with the backup. I think Allen's is the last time. I think they're pretty comfortable with the backup there.
Jack Allen's a big freshman.
Yeah, big freshman. So... And Allen was pushing for starting time anyway, so I think it'll work out fine on that part. It just hurts the depth. I'm not terribly worried about that. The thing I'm worried about with – you're 100% right, though, is to worry about teams keying on Sims, stopping the run game, and then there just not being any offense on the outside to support it. And – that's one of the things I found interesting about Jeremy Langford, is the Spartans look like they want him to become the next Keyshawn Martin, a fast playmaker who can get the ball on reverses, catch short screen pass, catch the bubble screen pass, catch the little slip passes inside, and really run with the ball. And he needs to work on catching the ball a little bit, because he used to be a running back. But if he can do that, they see a lot of similarities between Langford and Keyshawn Martin, and they're hoping that he's going to grow into that role. And so I would not be surprised if in one of the first two games of the season you see a little end-around to Jeremy Langford, just to get his feet wet and see how he does. Or you see him on a reverse. Or you see a couple of quick screens thrown his way just to see how he's doing and whether he can pull it off. Because he's that type of player. He's the home run hitter. And I think he's going to get a few chances to make some plays. And he's got a chance to get a grow into that Keyshawn Martin role. And if he's able to do that this year, watch out by the middle of the year. If he's able to do that, he could become a real weapon for the Spartans. He's one of the fastest players on the team. And if he gives them that home run threat, all of a sudden the field just starts to open up a little more. It gives Le'Veon Bell a little more room, and it gives Larry Caper a little more room, and it gives Deion Sims a little more room. And they get that threat that can take it all away, and that they've got to pay attention to it. Then the Michigan State offense can start doing some things. But I get the sense that someone like Benny Fowler, someone like Jeremy Langford, or someone like De'Anthony Arnett, one of those guys has to step up and really make an impact. Otherwise, it's going to be a struggle to put points on the board.
Yeah, I agree, Satchmo. That's an excellent point. Going to have to really get those receivers involved. And, it's not like we have three cupcake games and then we play Notre Dame. I mean, we start off with a very tough opponent in Boise State. We turn around and play a tricky road game at Central Michigan, and then against a pretty good Notre Dame defense, even though it's at home, it's going to get some feet wet. And I guess, if you're going to flip a little bit, hopefully not, you're going to be relying on your defense to help you out a little bit more in the first few games. And heading into the Big Ten season, it's not an easy thing to start off with. But hopefully the Spartans can navigate the rough waters and not lose too much.
Yeah. All right. Let's save the rest of the Boise State preview for next week, KP.
Unless you
have anything to add. Let's move on to, and this is just going to get me fired up, the AP preseason poll. First of all, why do we have preseason polls? Can anyone explain to me why we have a preseason poll? This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. It really is. We haven't even seen these teams play, yet we've already ranked them. How do you rank teams that you haven't seen play? And this is the problem with it, because you rank teams that you haven't seen play, that all of a sudden you realize that a team you rank 15th is really good. They're probably better than the top five teams you have ranked, but because the top five teams you have ranked didn't lose, you don't want to move to 15th. You don't want to move them up from 15th, which is just stupid. Moving people up and down from this base position, you just leave out good teams, or you take good teams, or you take teams that may or may not be good, and you give them all this preseason hype that they can't hopefully live up to, and then when they finish 7-5 or 8-4, you call it a disappointing season. Well, you want to know what's disappointing? It's the fact that you ranked them that high, not their season. It's not their fault that they were only an 8-4 team. It's your fault, you stupid pollsters, for ranking them that high. And making the preseason poll the baseline that determines how good your season is, it's just idiotic. But you want to know what's even more idiotic? I'll tell you what's more idiotic. Michigan being ranked 8th and Michigan State being ranked 13th when they're basically even teams. All right. That's idiotic. But there's something that's even more idiotic than that. Some numb-nut moron gave Michigan a first-place vote.
Oh, I heard about this, Satchmo. You know who it was?
Some guy from Illinois.
Yeah, some dude from Champaign, Illinois, of all things.
Yeah, Bob Asmussen. You want to know what Bob Asmussen is? He's an ass. The Champaign News Gazette, longtime beat writer. What games has he been watching? He should have his vote revoked right now. Holy cow. All right, DB, lower my blood pressure.
Here's my preseason poll clip. Well, I tell you what, you know, I'm not going to argue with you. I knew it was raising your blood pressure the other day when you texted me offline about it, because ESPN comes out with a crawl saying it was breaking news, which it's not.
Yeah, and when is the AP poll coming up? Breaking news.
Yeah. The other thing here, too, is it seems to me that what would be better, I'm okay even if the AP comes out with a poll, because the coach's poll, I believe, won't come out until after the first week of games, right?
Yeah, I think so. But you want to know what? There shouldn't be any polls until at least the first four games of the season are done.
Well, that's a lot to ask. That's too much to ask the polls to be that quiet for that long. I think at least give it a game until the AP comes out with a maybe two. But there could be a build-up to it. There could be speculation to it. The AP could have fun with that. But I think four games is probably too much.
Well, there's got to be at least two. But I think four games gives you an idea. I mean, you don't know how good a team is when they're winning 55-0 against a directional school. You don't know how good a team is when they're winning 72-3 against McNeese State. You just have no idea. You have to wait till everyone plays at least one good team. And I know
what I think they could do to make it interesting is just release like lists of some of what they think are the top teams going into the season without rankings attached to them, and say, okay, here in the Pac-12 we have USC, Oregon, Stanford, whatever. In the Big Ten we have, you know, Michigan State, Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, whatever it is, and then shuttle those out there without rankings on them, and then sort of put them in different places, you know, after game one or two, and then shuffle them around a little bit and not leave them in the same spot, you know, depending on, I mean, take into consideration their schedule after the first week and say, all right, you got Alabama beating Michigan, which is a stronger opponent than LSU beating North Texas. You know, then LSU has no business being number two. You knock them down to, you know, they're good, not to take anything away. They were on your list to start with. Well, you know, maybe they're 15 to start and they got to work their way up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The rankings starts too early.
Yeah.
It just does. I mean, that's the fundamental problem. The ranking starts entirely too early. It would be as if, I mean, it's like judging, you know, if you were judging a cooking contest, and you said, yes, before you tasted anything, here's how I rank the pie. These are the preseason pie. These are the pre-tasting pie rankings. You don't do pre-tasting pie rankings. It's silly, and that's what it is. And really, what it does is it gives the media something to talk about. And that's what the poll is for a reason. They give the TV networks a way to judge whether the game is worth putting on the air. It gives the newspaper what it is. It's for lazy newspaper beat writers. That's what it is, and for lazy newspaper editors. That's exactly what it is. They're like, oh, well, we have to put the results of this game because it's an AP Top 25 game in, rather than looking down and say, wow, Pitt and pick a team. Pitt and Utah just played a great football game. Wow, those are two really good football teams. Maybe we ought to have a 3-sentence game story on them instead of the number 5 team beating the 585th team 58-0. It's a substitute for good judgment, is what it is. It's lazy, and I understand why newspapers do it, and I understand why the broadcast networks do it, but it's got to stop. You can live without the polls for a few weeks. You can live with your independent judgment. You can watch the game and say, yeah, that's a pretty good football game between two pretty good teams. Let's do that game. That was a lousy game. We don't need to talk about that game. You're allowed to do things like that. It's just a crutch for the media.
Well, I'd love to be seeing these teams that are you know, on these lists. Maybe kind of have to get together and play each other on the schedule somewhere. You know,
that would be good. But the other interesting thing I think not having the polls would do is it would force fans to actually try and figure out who the best teams are out there on their own without worrying about where their team is in the polls. Because once they find out where their team is in the polls, they don't pay attention to anything else.
Right.
They worry about how their team is moving up and down in the polls.
And that unfavorably starts to influence the BCS rankings to some extent, too, which is not really fair right off the bat. No offense to USC, but no one's really even seen these guys play. We know they're probably going to be pretty good, but, you know, what if they stink out of the gate?
Yeah. And it's entirely possible when Lane Kiffin's coaching the team.
And by the way, everyone was talking last spring before John L. took over the position about Arkansas being number one. Well, does Arkansas not being number one have to do with John L. being the coach? Would they be number one if Bobby Petrino was still there?
You have to wonder, don't you? It is fair wondering about John L., because the last time we saw John L., he was slapping his own face. It is fair to wonder, and it is also fair to wonder if John L. is going to be wearing his cowboy boots on the sideline. I suppose, yes.
Oh, count on it. Count on it.
Yeah.
And count on the fact that he slapped his face at some point, too.
Oh, I can't wait for that. that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm actually looking forward to watching Arkansas football games now. I never did. Never cared. But I do want to see John L. and see how the Razorbacks do.
I would love to see John L. succeed. Hey, I got a quick question for you, Satchmo. I'm going to put you on the spot about John L. Smith and his time at MSU. Do you think that Spartan fans are still bitter at John L. Smith?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think there's no doubt they're bitter. And here's the problem John L. ran into with Michigan State fans is he did a really good job recruiting the skill position, the wide receivers and the quarterbacks and that sort of thing. And when you do a good job recruiting the skill positions, everyone gets excited and everyone gets hyped up without understanding that the game is won and lost in the trenches. And John L. didn't do a good job recruiting in the trenches. And that was Michigan State's biggest problem, was they didn't have the horses on the offensive or defensive line to really succeed. They did fine at the wide receiver position and the running back and the quarterback. They recruited fine there. They just didn't have any of the interior alignment on either side of the ball they needed to really succeed. So he recruited the glamour positions well, but didn't recruit the real worker bees well. And as a result, Michigan State fans got excited about what they thought was going to be a good team, and it never materialized, and it never could materialize because he didn't have the guys in the trenches. And so, yeah, I think they're bitter. I think to a certain degree, they don't acknowledge the recruiting issues that he had, that he faced, because he was handicapped in his recruiting, too. I mean, he was dealing with sanctions, too, wasn't he, DB?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And so, John L. did some good things at East Lansing. He improved the academic performance. He got some talent in there. He got some good talent to skill positions in there. I don't think the whole John L. era was a failure, but he got the point where D'Antonio could take over and do some good things with it. And so on that standpoint, yeah, but I think Michigan State fans are better. I think Michigan State fans, for the most part, if Arkansas start losing and losing big, they're going to be chuckling a little bit. And I kind of hope he succeeds. I think John L. was a good guy caught in a bad situation. And I wish him well.
Yeah, I think Spartan fans sort of look at the John L. era and kind of feel like that's wasted time. And their first reaction is going to be right away, oh, that idiot. And, you know, sort of like Michigan fans look at Rich Rod. By the way, I think I was mistaken. John L. did not have to deal with sanctions, but he did have a big problem when he took over for Bobby Williams, and that was Bobby Williams' loss of control with the program really caused the recruiting to stumble sort of out of the gate. There wasn't a strong perception of MSU at that time because of Bobby Williams, who was recruiting fairly well, but John L. kind of wasn't able to capture back what was lost.
Yeah, and he did make some mistakes, and by the time he realized the mistakes, he actually started to correct them. He thought he could recruit the same types of under-the-radar people that he was getting at Louisville and develop them, and he realized that he needed to go for a little more talented people than that, a little more physical dominance than that. It's actually the same sorts of mistakes Rich Rod made when he came from West Virginia to Michigan. Similar sorts of mistakes. Rich Rod didn't recover, and neither did John L. And that's all they wrote on the John L. era. He's Lansing. I do wish him luck. I like to make fun of him, but I'd like to see him succeed. Arkansas is going to put up a lot of points this season.
Well, next week when we talk about the season, we'll go through some of the highlight national games. But one that I know of in particular from looking around, I believe Alabama has to pay a visit to Arkansas very early on in September, Satchmo. That's going to be one heck of a game.
Yeah, it's going to be a good football game. Because one of the things you have to do to beat Alabama is you have to score points. Score points, you're not going to beat them. And I know that sounds really simplistic, but it isn't. If you think about it, Alabama's defense is traditionally so good that you can't move the ball against them. So you have to be an exceptionally good offensive football team to be able to move the ball up and down the field and score some points. And Arkansas is. So now that becomes a question is, all right, if Arkansas can put up 17 points, or 20 points. Will Alabama have enough offense to match that? And you just don't know the way Alabama plays, whether they will or they won't. I think it's going to be a really good football game. Definitely looking forward to that. All right. Ready to hop off of football here, DB?
Yeah, I think we could. I think we could hop off of football now. Sure.
All right. Mark Hollis is doing something interesting for Nike, and I was pretty surprised when I saw it. In 2017, it's going to be the 80th birthday of Nike co-founder Phil Knight. And as part of a celebration of that 80th birthday, Mark Hollis is creating two basketball tournaments, two 18 basketball tournaments. And they're going to be played in Portland, Oregon in November. And Michigan State is going to be involved, as is Ohio State, Duke, North Carolina, Connecticut, Georgetown, Texas, Oklahoma, Stanford, Oregon, Kentucky, Florida, Butler, Xavier, Gonzaga, and Portland. This could be the greatest collection of basketball teams outside the NCAA college basketball has ever seen in these two tournaments. This is remarkable. They're going to be playing at the Rose Garden and Veterans Memorial Coliseum. I've got to admit, I'm looking forward to this. This is a fantastic event. And Mark Hollis continuing to think big. He's proving himself time in and time again that he's a marketing genius. But not only a marketing genius, but he's able to convince other schools to hop on board, too.
Yeah, well, you know, he's shown so much success, Satchmo, as an athletic director, with these events that he's put on, going all the way back to his golden child, his big one, the Cold War hockey game outside, that kind of set the standard for all these outdoor hockey games now when you think about it. I mean, the blueprint was laid by Michigan State there with how to do that, and certainly they weren't the first, but the Spartans kind of showed how it could be done, and then the NHL and other college teams sort of picked up on it. And so he's really sort of a trendsetter. I mean, last year, for example, with the aircraft carrier game out in Southern California with North Carolina, well, it sounds like that's a tradition that's continuing now. A couple of other schools are playing in that game this year off the coast of, I think it's South Carolina or North Carolina somewhere, or Southern Virginia.
San Diego.
Still going to be in San Diego. Okay, but
yeah.
Two different schools. Well, San Diego State, I think, is involved in that game this year. That's why I was drawing a blank on it. I don't know who the other school is. They're not.
Yeah, I don't know who the other
Spartan
school is. But Michigan State's playing at Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany this year against UConn.
Yeah, that's going to be something, too. And that's going to be on Veterans Day again also, right?
Yep, that's good. Yep, November 9th. And then Hollis wants to, and he's exploring it, he wants the Spartans to play USC. That will be the Spartans versus the Trojans in Athens. How cool would that be?
That's very cool. I think he's got some details to work out with that one, though. I don't think that's happening this year.
No, that's not happening this year. He does have some details to work out. But I'm thinking, DB, I'm just going to throw this out there. Throw out the possibility of a Sparty Talk road trip to Athens.
Wow.
Just think about it.
I hope the euro is doing well.
No, I hope the dollar is doing well against the euro is what I hope.
Actually,
the other thing we have to hope for is Greece still exists as a country.
Right, yeah, that's a big question mark. It just might be some plot of land somewhere.
We might see a bunch of Germans drive up trying to claim it as part of a bankruptcy proceeding.
Yeah, people are just like, come on and take what you want. Hey, I got this temple. Where do I put it?
Parthenon for sale on eBay.
You'll see it in somebody's backyard in the Alpina. By the way, just a sidebar on that, driving in northern Michigan one time with my family, my young niece really, really loves Big Boy restaurants, and she was shocked and frightened when in someone's yard
It was the head of the big boy just laying there. Oh, the big boy. The big boy is the subject of a really famous short story. I can't remember who wrote it. It'll come to me later on. But it's really famous short story. But there have been lots of stories written about big boys. And the big boys have been big in TV commercials and movies, too. You see, in sort of a dystopian future, the big boy statues flying around in the wind. I guess it's a symbol of, I guess it is. It's a symbol of bygone era in America. I mean, there really aren't that many big boys around, and it's a symbol of a time where waitresses roller skated up the cars and delivered hamburgers and fries and milkshakes, and or when families went to Big Boy to eat for Sunday brunch or Sunday lunch and get a good wholesome meal. And people don't do that anymore. People don't go to Big Boys anymore. When's the last time you
still have
Big
them
Boy?
Around? And you still have them around a lot in the state of Michigan. And when the economy's down, people actually do kind of tend to go to more of the Denny's and the Big Boys and the Village Inns of the world.
Yes, the Village Inn. I think the Village Inns are interesting. They're kind of like IHOP, but they're not IHOP.
Yeah, they're sort of like IHOP.
Yeah. Yeah. They tend to be a little smaller than IHOP stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get some cavernous IHOPs out there.
You know, one other point about Mark Hollis that I wanted to make. First of all, the man's a genius because he's 2-0 against David Brandon, the University of Michigan athletic director, in the golf matches that they play every July.
You're going to be a marketing genius. You better be able to golf.
Yeah, you better be able to golf. And by God, the Spartans have a great golf program there, and he's probably got some ringers on his team there at Michigan State that carved him up this year. But the Hollis did a number on Brandon in the Mets play tournament again, so that was great to see. But the other thing too, Satchmo, that I don't want to lose sight of here is the big basketball game or games that he's scheduling at Denison Fieldhouse this season.
Yeah, and for the people that don't know, go ahead and fill in the details of the story on that.
Oh well, you may be better to say than I do, but some of this has to do with going back to the original idea. It was a game from the 1960s that was sort of a civil rights African American players.
Yeah, I believe it was Mississippi. I'm not 100% positive, but it was an SEC school. But I think it was Mississippi wanted to play a school from up north that had African American players, and they. Actually, it might have been another Southern school. But yeah, it was
Tuskegee?
Huh?
Was it Tuskegee?
Tuskegee? Yeah, it could be Tuskegee. No, Michigan.
Yeah, here we go.
Can I
read this to you? Michigan
yeah, go ahead.
State will commemorate the... Yeah, this is from the Lansing State Journal, greenandwhite.com. The writer is Brian Calloway. MSU will commemorate the 50th anniversary of the historic NCAA tournament contest between Loyola, Illinois and Mississippi State at Jenison Fieldhouse with the men's basketball team returning to their former home to face Division II Tuskegee University on Saturday, December 15th.
Yeah, so Tuskegee is a historic black university. It's a famous place. But it's the Mississippi State Loyola game that really counts, the basketball game. Mississippi State wanted to play the game. The governor of Mississippi said, hell no, you're not playing in this game. A lot of the South said, hell no, you're not playing in this game. And so they went and played the game in Jenison. And Michigan State hosted it. It was a significant moment in the civil rights movement. And
well, I have actual audio of that Mississippi governor telling the teams that they're going to have to go somewhere else. Are you ready?
Oh, play the cut.
All right. You boys are going to have to go play that game somewhere else up in Yankee country.
Do That's exactly what it sounded like. I mean, that's really good fidelity all these years later, and it's well-preserved sound.
That's an exclusive you're going to hear only here on Sparty Talk.
Oh, those wacky Mississippi governors. You never know what they're going to say in a given day.
Oh, boy.
But I think it's just exciting what he's doing.
And the game's going to be at Jenison. That's going to be a hot ticket.
That is going to be a hot ticket. It's going to be a hard ticket because Jenison doesn't seat that many.
No. First game there since 1989, too.
Yeah, first game since 1989. And for those of you that have never been to a game at Jenison, the highlight of a game at Jenison is when Michigan State would get on a run. And you can only fit 2,000 or 3,000 people into Jenison. So when Michigan State got on a run, all the students would start jumping up and down on the floor at Jenison. And it was standing room only there. And they were ringing the court up, barely anybody could. They jump up and down. And then because Jenison's an old barn, the floor and the walls would start to shake. And they would shake enough that the players dribbling up the court and running up the court could feel the ground start to move underneath them. And to see the wild-eyed looks on the point guard dribbling the ball up the court as the ground was moving underneath his feet and Michigan State was making a run was absolutely fantastic. When Jenison was rocking, it was one of the five most difficult arenas to play in the country. I have a feeling they fixed the structural issues there, DB, so the floor isn't going to rock the way it used to.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. That place did rock. I didn't actually see a game there, but I've got relatives and friends that attended Michigan State that shared that with me, and I remember watching a few games there when I was a kid on TV, and they would talk about how the press box and the camera platforms would shake because that crowd would get so loud.
Yeah, the press box would shake, the camera platforms would shake. You get unsteady pictures sometime on TV. If you want to hear someone tell a good story about it, listen to Magic Johnson every now and then. He'd talk about it, what it's like playing when the Jenison was rocking and the eyes of the other players, the opponents just getting bigger and bigger the more the ground shook, the more the ground swelled, the more the crowd jumped up and down. And the crowd knew it too. And the more nervous the players looked, the more the crowd jumped, and it just fed off of each other. And it was a place people did not want to go play. Oh, Jenison Fieldhouse. What an old barn. It'll be nice to see a game in there. And I hope ESPN televises the game just to get into the history of it. And if ESPN doesn't do it, I hope the Big Ten Network televises the game. I just want that game to be on TV. It deserves to be on TV.
I'm sure it will be, and I have a question for you in regards to that. Do you think that this is the beginning of where maybe like every other year the Spartans start playing a game there once in a while?
No, I don't think so, because I think the logistics are such a pain in the neck in terms of playing a game there that it's okay to do it as a one-time thing, but doing it on a regular basis just isn't worth it. Yeah, I think this is a one-time event, and I'm okay with it as a one-time event. It's fun, but I don't see a reason to continually do it. I think more important is getting some of these neutral site games that Michigan State's been playing and bring some of those games onto campus. To me, that's more exciting. Bringing in your Gonzagas and your Butlers and your Texases and your Texas A&Ms and your Tennessees, bringing all of those teams onto campus instead of playing them in a neutral site, that's what I would like to see.
Yeah, I agree. Let's see some of these games on campuses. These tournaments and these non-conference things on neutral floors are okay, but I want to see games on the campuses of these schools, and I want to see them play kind of like football does. I want to see North Carolina or whatever come to the East Lansing one year, and I want to see the Spartans go to Chapel Hill the next year or whatever. I don't want to,
you know, Duke still owes us a favor to come back to East Lansing and play a game at some point, so they need to live up to their end of the bargain. We've gone down there twice. They came up to East Lansing once, but I think the Blue Devils need a return trip back to East Lansing at some point.
Well, yeah, I'd love to schedule home and homes in the same season. How great would that be?
Well, that would be
something North Carolina
else.
Once in Chapel Hill. Yeah, it would be interesting. You play them once in Chapel Hill, and then maybe during conference season, you take one of the bye weeks, and the bye weeks line up, and you play each other on a bye week. I'm throwing the idea out there.
Talking about this, Satchmo, just makes me realize that college basketball, just there's so much more you can do with it than, no offense, NBA, but NBA, you're only interesting to some extent anymore when you get to the playoffs. Your regular season, college basketball is just so much more fun and interesting.
Yeah, I agree. College basketball, much more fun and interesting. All right, so
but also, Satchmo, before we move away from Mark Hollis, I want to commend him on two things that we didn't touch on there, and I think we're going to have to give a report after the first game. But the first thing, first of all, one thing overall, EB and Satchmo try every year, as many of you know, to go to the first Spartan home game every year for football. And this year, not, most years, DB, with his donor status, full disclosure, to the Spartan Fund, was able to pull up some tickets for that first game with no problem. Well, this year, Satchmo, tickets are selling like hotcakes, not just the first game, but all the games. These games are starting to become sold out. So your boy DB, he had to go to StubHub.com for the first time in memory to get a ticket for this game, the opening game.
You got to love StubHub. You really do. And it's interesting just how much StubHub has changed the way tickets are purchased. And I love buying tickets from scalpers. The first game I took my dad to, the first Spartan football game I took my dad to, I should say, it happened after I graduated and I came back. It was for homecoming, and I forget, we're playing Iowa or Indiana. It doesn't matter. And it was a sunny day. It was one of those rare, really sunny days in October where it was a good 70 degrees outside, 65, 70 degrees outside. So one of those Indian summer days. And DB, it's no surprise to you, Satchmo loved Indian summer.
You said that.
I did say that. So I told my dad, let's go to a game. And he's like, well, we don't have tickets. I said, don't worry about it. We'll get the tickets when we get there. He says, yeah, but it says the game is sold out. I said, Dad, don't worry about it. We'll grab the tickets when we get there. And he said, okay. So we packed up some food to tailgate with, and we headed off to East Lansing. And we got there around 10:30 in the morning, and we were driving through campus. And sure enough, as soon as we get onto campus, there's a student with a sign that says, two tickets and parking pass for sale, $50. So roll down the window, said, two tickets, parking pass, is two tickets, $50 a piece, or $50 total for the two tickets. And they're like, oh, $50 total for the two tickets. Like, oh, wow, and where's the parking pass? And they say, hey, the parking pass is out by Jenison. I was like, really? How about that? So for $50 from a student that was hard up for cash, we got two tickets that were at the 50-yard line, about 15 rows up from the 50-yard line. Parking tickets to the field by the Jenison, it was fantastic. We could not believe it. And so we go there, we eat, and we tailgate, we go to the game, and my dad has a blast at the game, I have a blast at the game, and my dad looks at me and says, like this every week? And I was like, yeah. He goes, I got to get season tickets. And he was talking about for his company, he wanted to bring clients out for it and things, but he was impressed with it. But that's the way it used to be. You used to walk around the stadium before the game, and you could pick up tickets for free. Not tickets for free, but you could pick up tickets really easily for people who were trying to sell extra tickets, didn't want to go to the game, that sort of thing. But StubHub has changed everything. Because now when people buy season tickets, they look at them as investments. All right, I'll buy the season tickets, and then I'll sell them on StubHub. And if I don't sell them on StubHub, I'll go to the game myself. And it works. It's been a pretty successful business model. And I got to admit, I miss the old school scalping, DB. I really do. I miss being able to negotiate with the scalpers and find deals with the scalpers and all that sort of thing, because most of the business is done in advance of StubHub. And I have to admit, now and then, I'll buy a StubHub ticket if I know it's going to guarantee me a seat. Like if we're traveling someplace and we really want to go to the game, you don't want to have to chance it with a scalper. So you StubHub it because you know you've got the seat in advance.
Yeah, that's the beauty of StubHub. I do love it. You know, you're able to get into stadiums now that, like you just said, you know, the legendary Lambeau Field, for example, before StubHub, you had to give your right arm and your left arm and your toes, and even that wouldn't be enough sometimes to get into that place. And now you can, you know, mind you still have to pay a price, but you have a better shot at it than before.
Yeah, and at least before going out to the Tundra, you know whether you're getting in or not with StubHub. But
yeah.
The other thing StubHub has really changed is the business model surrounding tickets. StubHub has made it so easy, has made the secondary market so easy for ticket holders to sell their tickets in the secondary market. Before, selling your tickets in the secondary market was tough because, let's just say you didn't want to go to the game. You still had to go to the game to sell your ticket. You didn't have to enter the stadium, but you still had to go. Now, if you're a season ticket holder, you don't even have to go to East Lansing to sell the ticket. Let's just say you're living in Novi. You don't want to have to go to East Lansing to sell your tickets on game day. You put them up on StubHub, and boom, you've sold them to somebody
yeah.
that really wants to go to the game, and you probably made a profit on your ticket. That's what's really changed. And because it's so easy, the barriers for entry are so low with StubHub to get into the secondary ticket market, now you're seeing teams like the Red Sox and the Orioles, and you name it, professional sports teams that are getting involved in reselling the tickets themselves. They're acting as their own StubHub.
By the way, speaking of that, I'm just going to digress for a second. Did you see what the NBA did the other day with their Ticketmaster agreement?
What'd they do?
Oh, this is kind of an interesting story. The NBA is going to use, they partnered with Ticketmaster to create sort of a StubHub buy-resell thing for fans. They're trying to, Ticketmaster's trying to use that to attack StubHub back.
Huh.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, here's the
thing.
So,
the NBA has named Ticketmaster their exclusive buy-resell partner or whatever. But it's not just it's not as though fans can't still go and buy and sell tickets on StubHub, though, so it's not going to completely defeat it.
No, and this is my problem, though, is the stadiums like to crack down on the scalpers outside the stadium and give them a hard time, but they're doing it themselves. I mean, why can't the scalpers do their business if the NBA teams can do it?
Yeah.
Or the major
well, that
baseball.
Is why you got to love places like if you've ever gone to a baseball game in Baltimore, scalping is perfectly legal out on the street.
I thought it was only legal in that certain scalping zone.
Well, maybe you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, that is true. But it's rare, though. I mean, it's a controlled scalping area, but it certainly is nice to have it there.
It is nice to have. And, DB, I haven't been to that many national teams, but I don't see a whole lot of scalping outside of National Stadium.
No, you don't really see that. I guess up to this point with the Nationals, though, Satchmo and I went to the New York Mets-Washington Nationals game the other day, and here in the D.C., D.C. at Nationals Park. And so, I think up to this point with the Nationals, my sense is that, you know, for one, there's no place to really go do it. There's no bars or anything around there. And I think the other thing is there hasn't been that necessarily demand up to this season for doing it other than, say, like opening day or, you know, when Steven Strasburg first broke into the league.
Yeah, I'll buy that. I'll buy that. 'Cause
yeah.
I mean, when we go to games at Spartan Stadium, we see scalpers now. So it's not like the scalpers have disappeared.
No.
They're just working harder for their money.
Yeah, they have to. I see them outside of the Washington Capitals games for sure.
Yeah, scalping has gone white collar. And it's gone legit. And it really does take some of the fun out of it too, DB. It takes some of the fun out of finding that person who really wants to sell the ticket and negotiating them down to a price where they still make a profit, but you know you just got to steal to get into the game. And there's something to be said for the art of the deal and finding it and making it happen and walking into the game with pride knowing you accomplished something. You don't accomplish anything by buying a ticket through StubHub.
No, not at all. And Satchmo, one more note about Mark Hiles before we jump away to anything else here, but the ginormous scoreboards that are about to go in at Spartan Stadium look like they're pretty nice, don't they?
Yeah, they do look like they're pretty nice. They look big, and they got the HD screens going. And it's going to be curious, because one of the interesting things that happened at Jerry World down in Dallas is everyone watches the screen and no one watches the game. If you take a look, if you watch a football game, and you can tell, the great thing about HDTV is you can tell what's going on in the crowd. You'll notice that everyone in the stands is looking up at the screen and not at the field. It's absolutely hilarious.
Right.
These people spend $300 to sit in their seat and watch a big TV screen. They really could have stayed at home and done that. So to me, the interesting thing to me is when we go to this game at Spartan Stadium and when we go to the Boise State game is to see how many people are going to spend the entire game watching the big HD TV screens on the scoreboard versus what's actually happening on the field. Now, I like watching
right.
the field. You know, that's just me personally, you know. You go to a football game where it's not a concept, watch what's happening on the field. But I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to be watching those scoreboards instead of the field.
Yeah, I think on one hand, where I'm with you all the way, Satchmo, well, when I go to a game, I am looking at the field. However, I do love those scoreboards for the replay. And I do love, you know, the other sort of advantage to it is they show, unlike Major League Baseball, for example, where they cut to just graphics on the scoreboard while play is in progress, at football games, college football, I believe NFL as well, they show it live on the scoreboard. So if someone's standing in your way in the aisle, you do have, you know, if you want to see the play happening, you can kind of look up and look at it if someone's blocking your view.
Yeah, that is nice, and you're going to be able to see that. What's also nice is the scoreboards and screens are bigger than Michigan's. Just saying.
It's what I like. You remember the old theory about Milton Berle, right?
What about Milton Berle?
Well, Milton Berle, Satchmo, was alleged to have had the largest penis in Hollywood. And Milton Berle, the old comedian, and a lot of our listeners probably don't even know who he is, so just Google him sometime. You can read all about this. But Milton Berle was very fond of just opening his pants somewhere and just letting somebody see the size of his thing, and people would just look at it in amazement at how large it was. And so this is the Milton Berle theory of the scoreboards here.
I like that. The Milton Berle theory of the scoreboard. All right. I'm a fan of that analogy.
Look how big mine is, buddy. Hey, you think yours is big? Watch this, pal.
I'm going to Milton Berle you, baby.
And you watch that. Well, some really hip, young Spartan scoreboard operator starts off Spartan opening game with a picture of Milton Berle. Damn it, I know he listens to this podcast.
Spartan Nation, and more importantly, Spartan scoreboard operator, do it for DB and Satchmo. Fire up a Milton Berle on the scoreboard before the game starts.
We'll twit pick it till our hearts content.
All right, Lynn Simon, DB. Our beloved president, has been elected the chair of the NCAA Executive Committee. How about that? How is that for a sign of respect?
That's outstanding.
Now, this is the committee that governs everything going on in the NCAA. It's a 20-member committee. And she'll be president, or she'll be chair through August 2014. And she's replaced Oregon State President Ed Ray, who really, if Oregon State wasn't a school, I don't think anyone would care. Well, they are the Beavers, and you got to care about Beaver. But outside of that, no one would care. I almost thought that would pass you, DB.
Yeah, no, I caught it loud and clear. I was just trying to give you your room to get the word out before my laughter interrupted me.
Fair enough. So this is very cool, but it is a sign of just where the Michigan State Athletic Program is right now. Lynn Simon is generally considered a person who works very well with her AD, Mark Hollis, and before that, Mason. Ron Mason, but is also considered a really smart thinker when it comes to academics and athletics and merging the two and melding the two and how the two should work in conjunction with each other. And she's shown a steady hand in guiding the Michigan State program along, and she's getting respect for that. I think people across the country in college athletics, look at Luanna Simon and say, yeah, she's a person that's doing this right in Michigan State. Look at where the basketball program is. Look at where the football program is. And look at where Michigan State is academically now. It's tough to get in. It's a lot tougher to get into Michigan State now than it used to be. DB, I don't know if you'd like to get in to East Lansing compared to when we got there. You got high GPAs. You've got Rhodes Scholars, you've got great research being done there. It's become an academic institution of note. And you combine that with the athletic programs, and you're looking at what really is a model for how that should be handled and how that should be developed. And I think this is an acknowledgement of the strong work Luanna Simon's done in that capacity.
Well, and it's odd that you would just mention that, with the high academic standards, because, Sashmel, this is a little bit of a segue. Out in the news just recently is the 2013 edition of the best 377 colleges, including the top party schools list, Sashmel. And can you take a quick guess as to who the number one in the country party school is?
Well, it's got to be Wisconsin, does it?
Oh, no, it's not. I'll get to that
it's
in a second. It's not a Big Ten. The top school, top party school right now, rated by this publication, and we all know they have a good time in Wisconsin, so this list might be full of baloney, but the top party school right now is not a Big Ten school, although it is in the East.
Kent, Maryland?
No, but they are on the list. They're in the top 20, but it's not Maryland. You're close.
Virginia?
Well, no way.
No.
Not University of Virginia. West Virginia. They burn couches there in Morgantown.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you go down the party schools, you have to start with the places that burn couches, and West Virginia's at the top of the list.
Now, here's what you're going to be surprised at even more. At number two on this list is a Big Ten university. Guess which one comes in there at number two, party school?
From the sounds of it, it's going to be a school that I wouldn't expect, so I will go with Iowa.
You're right. And I'll take it one step further. There's one more Big Ten school in the top five. You might also be a little surprised at this. Yeah.
All right, I'll take another shot in the deck. I'll go with Illinois.
Oh, my goodness gracious. You're not looking at anything, are you?
I'm not looking at anything. I've got a 3-plus story of Luanna Simon being the next chair on my screen.
But you remember
Did
something,
I get it?
Satchmo, and I think, yeah, you're right.
Holy cow.
University of Illinois comes in at number four, and Penn State, I'm looking at other Big Ten schools here, Penn State's number 11, Wisconsin fell all the way down to 13. They've got to be depressed in Madison about that.
There's going to be more weed and alcohol this year than there's ever been in Madison. they got to reclaim the title. I want this to be my next Jeopardy category. I want to do daily doubles in this.
But, you know, Satchmo, do you remember when this list was a badge of shame and Michigan State used to be right at or near the top? I mean, when we were in school, that was Michigan State was right up there.
Yeah, and everyone, well, not everyone. I think administrators and the professors, they were embarrassed by it. The kids loved it. The students loved it.
Yeah.
Those arrogant bastards at U of M used to look down at us upon, though. And
yeah.
we'd always look at them and say, uh-huh, and exactly where are you every Saturday night, every Friday night? That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're up in East Lansing, exactly.
Well,
it's no secret. I started to tell you this the other day at the Nationals game, but John U. Bacon, a Detroit News part-time contributor. He used to be a regular writer for the Detroit News, a University of Michigan guy. A good writer, though. He wrote a book about Bo Schembechler. He rated all the differences once, and not just sports, but other things, too, between the University of Michigan and Michigan State, going all the way down the list. And he got into football tailgates. And the end of his story just was awesome. He said, okay, so I've experienced plenty of University of Michigan tailgates, and I've experienced some Spartan tailgates. And he said, I'm sorry to tell you, Wolverine Nation, the best tailgates in the state of Michigan happen in East Lansing, Michigan on football Saturday.
There you go.
I loved it.
We heart bacon.
Gotta love that. And bacon is good, by the way. Bacon goes good on anything.
There you go.
Very good. Yeah.
Let's save this for next week. I wanted to talk about Tom Izzo and his chances of coaching the next Olympics. But let's save this for next week. And, CB, I know you had a chance. You had a story about Phoenix that you wanted to talk about. So let's close the show
on
that.
Yeah, so we're getting near the end of the podcast. We've got a few minutes left here on blogtalkradio.com/Sparty on. And, by the way, our Twitter handle, which I've been tweeting a little bit tonight, is Sparty Talk. So make sure you check us out. And I just before I get to this real quick, this is a random aside from watching Twitter tonight during the podcast, Satchmo. Tom Crean, the Indiana basketball coach, has been tweeting out random stats from last season about the Hoosiers basketball team. Why is he doing that tonight, Satchmo?
His wife and kids are visiting the in-laws?
isn't that random and odd to you that he's just like throwing? He's talking about how many layups and dunks they had at home, and what is he just like studying the media guide tonight, or what's going on?
I have no idea. It could be they're putting the media guide together.
And he's reading the information.
Well, no, not he's reading the information. It could be that whoever the SID just happens to have access to Tom Crean's Twitter account is publishing random stats as they put the media guide together.
It's just random. I'm reading this. Okay, so real quick, I want to get to Phoenix. And I know Satchmo is looking for things to do this weekend before he comes to East Lansing next weekend. Well, Satchmo, I think after I read this story, he's going to be booking his flight right now to Phoenix to give us a report. Here's the headline. This comes to us from the Phoenix New Times, Dateline Phoenix, Arizona. The name of the column is called "Not That There's Anything Wrong with That," but ... The headline is, "And Topless Women Will Be Walking Around Phoenix This Weekend."
Really?
Yes, and here's what this is, and you'll see the picture there, and I'm sure guys don't get too excited because I have a feeling that
I have a feeling that the ladies walking around probably aren't going to look like what they show in the photo. If you've been to the beach lately, you'll know what I mean. But anyway, topless women will be walking around downtown Phoenix on Sunday as part of what's being billed as a protest against the gender inequality. Go Topless Day is what it's called. Apparently exists on an international level in an effort to make laws about showing woman boobs and, well, we don't need to see this, man boobs the same.
Okay. See, I was with them right up until the man boobs part.
They had you going to that one, didn't they?
They had to go there. If they just stayed away from the man boobs and said they wanted equality, women should be able to go topless just like men do, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, if men can walk around without a shirt on, women should be able to too. That's what equality is all about.
That's right.
I'm okay with that. But they had to bring in
okay
the man boobs.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah, you talk about a buzzkill. Oh, that is a good story, though.
Yeah,
I wonder what the city of Phoenix thinks.
I'm looking through here. There's no comment that I see from anyone from the city of Phoenix, but I'm sure the weekend gets closer, they'll be here.
You want to know who would be fun to get a comment from? John McCain.
What would be funnier still is to get him participating, walking around Phoenix with his shirt off.
Oh, good grief!
I mean, not that anybody wants to see it, but the fact that he'd be partaking would be quite amusing.
Yeah, how many countries is this happening in? Does it say?
No, it doesn't even get into that. This is the first I've heard of it. Although, now here we go. There is a line here about how it says the legality of female breast showing varies across the U.S. Ladies can go full breast in New York City.
Really?
Yeah, and it says, here we go. Phoenix Police Sergeant Trent Crump tells the New Times the local protest will be legal as long as the ladies keep... keep their nipples completely covered.
So pasties.
Yeah, I guess so. That kind of defeats the purpose of it a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, pasties and topless are two different things.
Yeah.
But,
this will start at... this isn't really a good place to start this. I'd like to question the organizers. They're going to start the stroll at Steele Indian School Park. That doesn't sound to me like a good place. Steele Indian School Park is where the stroll down Central Avenue topless will begin.
Yeah, see, that's just bad. That's just bad planning.
Yeah, that's bad planning. That shouldn't be where it starts.
No, look, if you're going to do something like this, you need better messaging than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just, as a communications professional, that just stresses me.
And not to mention, in the era of social media, they've only got 10 women signed up for this thing so far.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's as of, when did this come out? That's as of Monday afternoon.
I mean, jeez. I could get 30 women in Tampa signed up in 20 minutes. What's taking them so long?
Oh, tell you what, Satchmo, you just hit on something. You need to go down for the convention before you come to East Lansing, and you need to organize something like that to go by the Tropicana Field or wherever they're doing this thing at.
Oh, you got me flying all over the country, DB.
Well, I think you should avoid Phoenix and just go start your own thing in Tampa.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
What a podcast we'd have next week. We'd have the Spartan recap and Satchmo's breath walk.
Oh, you're going to throw my name in front of it now too?
I didn't know to call it. It's like a blank slate. We're just coming up with ideas here. I'm not all of a sudden you're commissioning the name. It's Satchmo's Breathwalk. Although it doesn't have a good ring to it, I would say seeing you leading a charge of entertainers down the street would be quite fascinating.
It does have a good ring to it, but see, that's my question: is how do they only get 10 women signed up for this? The recruiting spots are quite obvious here.
Yeah. I think it's been poorly planned, and it doesn't sound like it sounds like the organization for this is really bad.
Yeah, that's just disappointing. I mean,
I was really excited about this until I kind of read more into it, and then I read deeper beyond the first paragraph, and now it's really kind of a butt. I think I've killed the end of the podcast with that story. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. It was worth it. I enjoyed this.
We did end up with Satchmo's Breathwalk out of it.
I am intrigued, and I have no doubt that there are many Republicans who would like to lead that charge as well. And so if you're listening and you do lead the charge in Tampa and it is covered, we will mention it here on Spartacus. We're equal. Yeah, we've got nothing against that. So Republican convention is going. Understand, Dale Mabry Highway. 30 words. That's all you need to know. Now I've killed the podcast.
Oh, my. We need that Price is Right loser horn sound effect right now.
Oh, one up, I got the punch.
Take your turtle act and get off my damn stage. Oh, my God. I think we should just give away free turtle wax to anyone who's still listening now at this point.
Yeah, if anyone's still listening at this point, go post something on my MySpace page, and if you do in the next 5 minutes, I'll give you something.
Yeah, we will appreciate you hanging in there because we've gotten to the end of the line here, and I guess we will just bring it back up here by saying next week. Very exciting. Somewhere in the middle of next week, we'll announce that we'll have a preview of Spartan football for the whole season, make our predictions, talk about the Big Ten, and shoot around the country a little bit just to give you our thoughts on that next week.
All right. That's a good note to end it on. That's it for this week's edition of Sparty Talk. You can follow us on Twitter at Sparty Talk. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.